This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. Jeff Palermo is producing today, and our leadoff guest is Adam Knapp, the president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber of Commerce. And, of course, Adam is following the path of coronavirus. 7.5 months ago, the governor instituted his stay-at-home order. And now, 7.5 months later, we still are fighting this, as is evident by what's going on in the White House, with more people getting it by the day. And now 215,000 Americans have died of COVID-19. But the Baton Rouge business community is trying to rebound, as others across the country are. Lauren Scott, the seasoned economist, has said it'll be a couple of years before things may get back to normal. Adam Knapp, it's been a few weeks since we've talked with you. How's it looking right now?
Well, thank you for having me on, Jim, and really appreciate the opportunity to share the latest dashboard. We do a weekly economic dashboard, will be coming out today. We had a height of about 60,000 people at one point claiming unemployment insurance due to the pandemic's effect on the economy. That number is now dropped to 35,000 folks still claiming unemployment insurance. Incredibly high number still. Fortunately, it's coming down. It was 38,000 last week, so the number is declining. But boy, that's a big number. It was, for reference, it was about 2,000 people on unemployment insurance, more of a common number for what we see in the economy. That was last February. So to go from 2,000 up to now 35,000 for where we are, that remains the biggest issue for everyone, is to see the economy reopening and getting folks a path back to work. And one of the big reasons last week, Jim, we released a short-term training guide for folks who aren't able to get into employment. We list open jobs at our BR Works page on our website every week, and really encourage folks to take a look there. But if they don't find that, there are over 300 short-term training guides, resources you can pursue that you can finish in 12 months or less, many of them 12 weeks or less, that give you a track into some of the open jobs that are available in the economy. And so what we call beating back unemployment is one of our goals right now. That's one of the ways we're trying to do it, is to help steer folks into resources.
Again, 877-217-5757 in our time with Adam Knapp, and you can send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. And these are uncharted times. We're facing something that we've never done before in our lifetimes. I don't think anyone's around except for Julia Hawkins from 1918, when we had the pandemic that killed 675,000 Americans. And who knows, by the end of this, unfortunately, we may have that many people dead this time. We have more people in the country, but we're far from the end of this. Does that concern you? Does that give you pause, Adam, that there's really, at this point, no end in sight?
It definitely does. And one of the things that we're seeing is more folks are slowly beginning to reenter their business and reopen their offices. We've seen a slow but steady amount of folks returning to their workplace and that workplace activity. Not yet back to normal, obviously, but it's creeping back up. After the governor's September 10th announcement of the moving to phase three, we've seen a number of professional offices continue to go back into the workforce. And then in that data, it also shows that mobility in our community is from folks traveling from their home to work has continued to steadily go up. What you're going to see is, if you look back and look to when we had a spike in July and August and, COVID again, that folks pulled back a bit, right? You saw some folks pull back from their offices, send folks back home. So we're teasing and testing this to go, teasing it out to see if you can get back into the workforce again. And folks, as we've always advocated, should be wearing masks, be following social distancing guidelines. We've put out in our document back in May is there's a way to be both safe and at work and have the economy be open. And that you're seeing that more and more for employers working through those steps. So then we continue to encourage.
Well, let's take a few calls for Adam Knapp. Jim on Highland. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Adam Knapp.
Hi, good Jim. Morning. I appreciate all the great work Adam does. But I was shocked yesterday when I saw how many people in Baton Rouge are behind on their mortgages. And when you look at unemployment, so many self-employed people do not go out for that because they're hoping to recover. And it's such a threat. And now that in the paper today, they had an article that the second effects of the virus that are coming back to people are getting just as sick as if they have the virus. Adam, how do you figure about all these mortgages that are not being paid by individuals?
Well, Jim, you're spot on. It's a big concern. And our guess is that because the $600 payments that were coming from unemployment insurance ended on August 1st, we're now finding ourselves roughly beginning of October, so we're 2 months later. There was a short period of where the federal government had a supplemental amount, or a period where they've been plussing up from the Trump administration about $300, plus about $200 you're getting, a little less than that, from the state for unemployment insurance. So the amount has gone down that folks have at home. And I think that you're seeing that play out in the mortgage data. Louisiana and Baton Rouge are among the worst where we've seen in the country, the amount of folks that are behind on mortgages. And that's a concern we got to definitely watch. Housing vulnerability is, again, one of those things as this duration of this continues is a major issue for our community. That's why we continue to emphasize the open jobs that are out there and the training opportunities that are out there. Those 35,000 folks still claiming unemployment insurance are folks we should be trying to reach with resources.
All right, a question from a listener. This is Tom on Bluebonnet about conditions now that give bars and restaurants, bars in particular, more latitude. Is that a good thing?
Well, it's a good thing if you realize these are as a big part of the economy that are tied up in bars, and it's one of the few that have been shut down. The big call has been to treat bars and restaurants similarly. Many restaurants look and feel like bars, and many of the bars operate, they're not all Tigerland. I think that's the misunderstanding for a lot of folks, is that they all are perhaps, out of control. When the vast majority, they're well-managed, folks and the businesses are strong businesses, and they employ a lot of folks. And so I think it's a healthy thing. What we all have to be asking for is that everybody who's going to, going to bars acts the same way they would as if they're going to restaurants, and they behave and they stay distant from others and try to stay with their groups. And some of those practices, if managed well, we should be able to be fine.
All right. Allison on Highland asks if the closing time has changed. Is it still 11 o'clock?
I wouldn't be if I had been out at a bar last night at 10:30, I could have told you, but I have not been out to bars myself very much.
I was in Atlanta over the weekend briefly, and the bars were open very late. Now, another question from a listener. This one from John at LSU asking about the debate that's scheduled next week between the mayoral candidates that you are a sponsor of, and there's some now controversy because only four of the candidates have been invited. What's your take on the importance of the debate and how you decided who's participating?
Well, sure. This is an important conversation and topic. The poll that was released yesterday was part of helping us make a determination of how to set up the event. It's a big field of candidates. We knew we couldn't have all of the candidates and be able to get into deep substantive issues with only an hour of TV time to go. And so we made a decision in running the poll that we would use a 5% threshold, and anybody who was above that threshold would get in, and we would invite them to the conversation. That cutoff ended up only having four folks that made it above that threshold. And so our sense has been to stick with that as the priority. Mm-hmm. The big issue you have when you're setting one of these up, and you'll know this, Jim, is that you have to balance time and quantity of questions. And if you have a lot of candidates, you have less time to be able to ask issues. And there are so many big problematic issues that we need to be able to talk about and forward-looking opportunities that you really can't get into if you don't have enough time to be able to get into those issues. And so our decision was to be able to afford ourselves more time to ask questions and to set a threshold limit for how many folks would be invited to come. And it could have been five, it could have been six. It depended on how many got above 5% when they came in. Okay. That was our recommendation about how to set that up.
Yesterday, I moderated the Baton Rouge Press Club debate of the candidates. There were six present, and the mayor, mayor president, who's leading in your poll by a pretty good margin, made a plea that all six candidates be invited to any future debates. So you're going against the mayor's wishes, Adam Knapp. Carl in Baton Rouge. Carl, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Adam Knapp.
Yes, my question was very much the same as what was just discussed, dealing with the candidates at the for next week's show. I would like to know why there are four career politicians that would be invited to that.
All right, four career politicians, he says, and I guess when I think about it, they are seasoned politicians. All of them, except for Steve Carter, are office holders, and Steve was until very recently. And then you got the two up-and-comers, if you will, the young Jordan Piazza and more old Eric Gayrard, who's 62. We'll talk more with Adam Knapp, and also we plan to hear from Roy Fletcher when we return after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. In just a bit, we're going to hear from the veteran political consultant Roy Fletcher. We're 4 weeks away from an election. That includes the Baton Rouge mayor's race. Adam Knapp is with us for a few more minutes, president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber of Commerce. More than a decade he's held that post, and he is preparing for a debate next Tuesday, a week from tonight, in which four of the six mayoral candidates have been invited, and two have not, and one of those is calling in right now, Jordan Piazza. Jordan, you have the floor with Adam Knapp. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Hey, Adam, you know, I just want to say for the listeners, these are unprecedented times, like you've mentioned. This is an unprecedented race, and due to all the restrictions we have in East Baton Rouge Parish that have been put in place, and in my opinion, it's important that all are included, because we've seen that from your poll, 20% are undecided. How can BRAC justify only allowing four of the six candidates, when two of which approved BRAC's contract with the city that's 10% of y'all's annual budget?
All right. Adam, please.
Well, same reason we said before, and I appreciate Jordan calling in and asking. This is an impressive race. He's pulling ahead of Mr. Gayrard in the race, but is still behind four other candidates. We set this without regard to who is going to be considered. We just said whoever is above 5% to be able to invite folks in and have them be able to be substantively debating issues. We wanted to be able to have enough time to get into those, and we only had a limited amount of time to work with for the amount of allotted time on TV. So that's how we recommended doing it. It's been done in a lot of other places to do it with a limited field and using an independent poll to determine, you know, who's above a certain threshold. So we followed that practice and recommendation and set it up that way. I think it's important to know the TV station, as I understand it, has offered to give equal time to the candidates not invited to the debate, which will give everybody an opportunity to get their work out there in public. And I think that's an important way to know that issues will get debated. We did not have any consideration about who would have been a part of that group. Whatever was the candidate field above 5% would have been invited. And so it's unfortunate for Mr. Piazza that he was just shy of that number. And I hope he has a successful race and is somebody that's impressive to watch his race. He's got a lot of signs out in the community. I think he's looking like he's got a good opportunity. But we had to make a decision, and that was the one we made.
And we've opened a Pandora's box here, and now we have Eric Gayrard calling in for Adam Knapp. Eric, do you have a question for Mr. Knapp?
Well, yeah, more of a comment and I guess a question. I'm concerned about your logic here. I mean, you're saying that it's a time allocation thing, but yet if Jordan Piazza and I had reached 5%, then all of a sudden time allocation is okay, I guess. I'm curious about the analytics of this poll. It was done a week ago. How were our names presented? Was my name even pronounced right? I have more name recognition than everybody except for the mayor in this race. So I'm a little curious as to how you think that could possibly be, that the name Eric Gayrard is not resonating in a poll, which is based largely on name recognition at this point. I just think it's patently unfair, and the citizens of Baton Rouge deserve to hear from all the candidates, especially the two outsiders.
All right. Adam, are you sticking to your guns, or is there a possibility you can adjust?
No, I think we've laid out our plan and let everybody know the process for setting up the poll or the forum. I will announce that JMC Analytics, who did the work, are a highly reputable professional group. They've been based here in our state for a number of years. They know the players. So I have to assume that they know what they're doing when they ran the poll and did it properly. It had no we made sure that the language of how it was asked was appropriate. And so I would assume that they did a good job of pronunciation. They're all Louisianans that are operating the poll and did a good job. That they've done reputable work in prior political elections statewide and in our community. So I think it is not the pollster that we would have a concern with. It's just the process that is unfortunate for the two candidates that called in that they're upset about.
All right. Steve Myers, who ran for mayor in 2012, asked how long will the debate be and could it be extended? I suppose it's an hour. I don't know. But if it were 2 hours, would that give you more flexibility as far as inviting more people?
It could. We've been allotted an hour. I think there's other things on TV right at the same time. So we're happy that we were able to get any time. And it's a good question. We could look into that.
Are you backing a candidate in the race?
No, sir.
No.
Our organization doesn't endorse candidates. And so we'll try to work with whoever's going to be in the race. Part of the reason we put out a mayoral platform is to encourage the issues that are going to be facing this parish for the next 4 years.
Now, you have been involved in, like, school board races, haven't you?
There's a political action committee we have. It does get involved in races. It is not getting involved in the mayor's race, but it is endorsing in metro council races. It does endorse in school board races and legislative races. And it asks candidates when it interviews them about the major issues facing the economy for the state or for the community. And so that's really how they frame their work, but they're not playing in the mayor's race. They haven't played in the mayor's race in the past.
All right, Ike and Gonzalez, please be brief. Ike, you're on with Adam Knapp, and we have Roy Fletcher on deck. Ike, good morning to you.
Well, this would be a question for both of these guys, but to be honest with you, I'm trying to find out whether there will be exit candidates questions about proposed constitutional amendment, which is number 5 on the ballot. And if they're in favor of that, I'm wondering who will be representing the school boards and local taxing authorities when we have district attorneys and city attorneys who can't even understand revised statute 3050.
All right. What about particular questions in the debate? How will that be determined?
We've been working with the TV station to have, work up a list of questions for the issues. Largely, we've been looking at the mayoral platform and Metro Council platform that we worked up. It looks at 10 major issues that are facing the parish on that platform. And then the biggest issue is the lack of or need for collaboration between the Metro Council and the next mayor president on progress, how we're going to actually move forward real concrete issues that perhaps haven't been moving as fast as folks would like to see. To the caller's question, I don't think we're going to ask, I don't expect that we're going to ask about constitutional amendments. That has not been something that's come up. But I know that the Public Affairs Research Council does do briefings on the constitutional amendments if folks want to go get educated on what each of them are about.
Final question for Adam. Please be brief. Frank on Highland. Frank on Highland, you're on the air with Adam Knapp. Good morning. Oh, we lost Frank. So, Adam, appreciate your time as always, and let's talk again soon. It's always good to get your take, and good luck with your debate.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Roy Fletcher, the veteran political consultant, and we're going to cover some ground with him. And he is the guy who got Mike Foster elected in the year of 1995, 25 years ago. And Sunday, Mike Foster, Murphy James Mike Foster Jr., he died at the age of 90 in Franklin. And he was the first governor in the 21st century in Louisiana and the last governor of the 20th century. And we go back a century, and his grandfather was the last governor of the 19th century and the first of the 20th century in Louisiana. So a historic family, and services will be tomorrow in Franklin for Murphy J. Mike Foster, who was a larger-than-life fellow. And 11 o'clock at Oaklawn Manor, followed by a public military gravesite service at 12:30 at Franklin Cemetery. Before we get to Mike, I know you're representing Jordan Piazza in this mayoral race, Roy. Are you disappointed that he's not involved in this debate? Is that an infringement on the process?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed in two things. One is that Jordan is he's an outsider. He's a new fade name in politics in his community. And to nobody said to anyone there's a 5% standard of anything when all of this started. I never heard of it. And then all of a sudden, but you the campaigners themselves are late developing. A young guy like that, he just now has raised the money to be able to spend on TV and to get his name known and also to get his message known. And to do that is, it seems to me, is just sort of a roadblock to the ability of young people or different people or outside people to articulate what their vision is for a change in this community.
All right, we're going to talk more about that and Mike Foster and Donald Trump and Joe Biden with Roy Fletcher. He's at your service. Republican, former Democrat. He switched when Mike Foster did in 1995 and put that welder's mask on, and Mike Foster became a two-term governor, the first two-term Republican in modern time in Louisiana. We're back after this 90-second pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org. Roy Fletcher is in the house, veteran political consultant. Cut his teeth many years ago, starting in the business with Gus Weil and Ray Strother, who will be with us tomorrow. Again, 877-217-5757. I didn't realize that we're going to have so much discussion, but it's a worthy topic about these two candidates being excluded from the mayor's debate next week by BRAC and WVLA, E. Eric Gayrard and Jordan Piazza, who's Roy Fletcher's client, Piazza is. Charles on Ursuline says somebody needs to find out whether TV is donating time and what it would cost to buy an hour and set up a GoFundMe account to have all the candidates in. Roy, will there be perhaps a response? I remember we used to have these hour-long infomercials of candidates. You probably put a few of those together. We don't do that anymore. I liked those back in the day. Are you there, Roy Fletcher?
I'm here.
Yeah. What do you think about an infomercial of the candidates?
I love that. I mean, the theory was is that nobody would watch it because attention spans are so short. I've learned over the years that if you do something 30 minutes or so, what happens if people watch it a little bit and they keep what, if you repeat it enough, they'll pick up little parts of it and they will stick with it. It's kind of interesting. I agree with you, Jim. I think it's time for the renewal of the long pieces.
Yeah, and you mentioned long pieces. I remember one that I guess you worked on back in 1980 with Ray Strother and Russell Long, and that was just a killer profile of Russell Long, and
yeah, it was. Raymond did a brilliant job on that,
and even got Bob Dole on camera to endorse Russell Long, and he was running against Woody Jenkins.
Time.
He was running against Woody. Yeah, it was a different time.
That's right. It was a different time. You know, I did a long piece for Dave Treen in '83, a 5-minute piece. Which I love 5 minutes. I mean, it's 4:30 actually, but I love those because you have long enough time to tell a story, and I like doing those long pieces like that. It might just be time for that.
I think so, but it costs money, of course. 877-217-5757. Rinaldi in North Baton Rouge, you're on with Roy. Hi, Rinaldi.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, listen, you know, salute to Governor Mike Foster. I didn't always agree with him, but he was my senator when I was living in the metro area of Morgan City, Louisiana. But my question, Roy, is things like TOPS were originally created for poor and minority students. And essentially, what has now become is a middle-class tuition reimbursement for middle-class white kids. So when Dr. Taylor created the program, he created it for kids. And the other thing is, why do you think Joe Biden will win the presidency, even though President Trump has not gotten over 42%,
45%? All right.
Well, okay. I love the TOPS question, though, because I don't think that was in any way, shape, form, or fashion that was the way it was it was intended to be was a way for everybody to be able to go to school. I mean, literally, tuition free. And all you had to do was achieve a certain, and it wasn't, and remember when it started, it was not a very extraordinary level to do that. It, Jim, am I correct about that? It was like a 2.5 or something like that out of high school?
Yeah, and like a 20 on the ACT.
Yeah, it was. I mean, so, and the standards have gotten a little different over the period of years, but it was always, race almost had nothing to do with that. I mean, to interject race in that's kind of weird. And I think there's been a lot of African American in this state to have benefited from that program, and a lot of other people too. But I mean, it absolutely has been a program that was it was an extraordinarily progressive and bold program. It had been done in Georgia by Zell Miller, and the governor and Pat Taylor started a program, mm-hmm. a pilot program in New Orleans, and then the governor said, let's do this.
And it caused all these huge apartment complexes to open in your neighborhood because these kids they're now spending their money living lavishly while they're going to school. I remember
the new car dealers are doing pretty good too.
And I remember when I enrolled at Hodges Hall, we had no air conditioning. We had no hot water in the showers and no privacy in the bathroom. It was like the military. And today, my God, that would be something that the university would probably be sued over for inhumane conditions. But times have changed.
Jimbo, I'll just take you a little further. I used to walk 2.5 miles in first grade to get to the bus to ride 14 miles to get to school.
In the snow.
In Vernon Parish.
In the snow.
in the snow. Barefoot.
All right. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Roy. Good morning to you, Dan.
Morning. Tell me, was Mike Foster disappointed in what his protege, Bobby Jindal, did to higher ed in Louisiana?
That's a good question. Jindal, of course, gutted higher education's budgets, and Foster, who was governor in a different time when the state had more money, he pumped lots of money into, particularly his
I never had that conversation with him, but let me say this, is that for 4 years, Louisiana, and I remember reading this in like an Education Digest or something, for 4 years, Louisiana was second in America, in the nation, in higher education investment. It was an extraordinary time for the state of Louisiana. And then in the second term, the governor clearly needed more money to continue that effort. And consequently, something called STELE plan popped up. And he and I handled the campaign. And he promoted the hell out of it. And we won that race. And I think that his disappointment was to see the STELE thing dismantled, because it was an assurance of a very, very steady stream of funding for the state of Louisiana over a long term, long period of time. And I think that, so I would answer your question that way.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana, you're on with Roy Fletcher. Hi, Henry.
Good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Roy. Mr. Jim, you forgot something about Mr. Roy, both coming to the bus and going home from the bus. Those were uphill walks that Mr. Roy had to take, I hear tell. I was wondering how y'all think. Y'all were talking about the longer political commercials. I remember reading in the ancient history books, but y'all might have been around then, back in the 71 campaign, had a great fellow named Warren J. Pugimoti who would come on for 30-minute segments. And as I understand it, everybody in Louisiana tuned in on Sunday afternoon to watch old Poogie, and everybody could tell you everything that he said a week later. How do y'all think that would go over?
And I got to tell you, I happen to remember that quite well, and was a junior in college when Warren J. Pugimoti was doing that. And I'll tell you why we remembered it. Because you didn't know what the hell Pugimoti would say about somebody.
Yeah.
And he generally said anything he wanted to say about anybody. And, and uh, you know, I think probably libel laws are a little bit more slander and things like that are a little bit more tighter nowadays.
Well, I don't know about that.
If
you're a public figure, you can be attacked. But in most cases, I know, you know, you do too. We've covered public officials who have secret lives, and some of them who are married men, have girlfriends and boyfriends. But he accused Edwin Edwards, of all people, of having a boyfriend.
Yes, he did. That was the strangest man I've ever heard.
Yeah, now Edwin Edwards. What was his line? When he beat David Treen the year you were running Treen's campaign.
Yeah,
he said the only way I can
lose
is if I'm caught in bed with a dead girl or a live boy.
A live boy. That's right. That's exactly right. But that's why Poogie Motu was memorable. He was something else.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on with Roy.
Not just another pretty face. I'm sorry, that's just one of the most beautiful campaigns, you did a great job on that. 35 millimeter film,
you know,
wonderful campaign.
Phil's being a little modest here. Phil did a lot of lighting for me for Mike Foster. Phil's a lighting man, and he helped light up a bunch of commercials for me. And I just want to say thank you, Phil.
All right. And before we continue our conversation after the break with Roy, here's Mike Foster with yours truly, and I believe Roy was in studio. In fact, I know he was a few days before his 80th birthday, July 9th, 2010. Here's Governor Foster.
I didn't take a whole lot of interest in politics until I was, I think, 59 years old and running a small business. It just got so hard to operate. Then I thought we could do things a little better. That's the only reason I ran. Glad I did it. It had nothing to do with any politics in the family before. I was basically pretty apolitical. So actually, I got angry at a guy that represented me that wouldn't take my phone calls, and that's probably the reason I ran.
Well, Governor,
we
thank you for your time. Wish you a happy birthday. And at the age of 80, you can tell this man is strong. He sounds great. He looks great. Feels great, I'm sure, and he'll be around for a long time to come, and we'll be calling again. Thanks, Governor.
Good to talk to you. I'm going to get my old bald head trimmed.
Thank you, Governor Foster. Best to you and Miss Alice.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Roy Fletcher with us for a few more minutes, and then we'll hear from the exceptional writer Francesca Bowman joining us from Great Britain. And Roy Fletcher, Rinaldi in Baton Rouge asked a question that some listeners asked us to follow up on. That's about the presidential election. We'll close with that. The latest conflation of polls from Real Clear Politics has Joe Biden leading by 9.2% and leading in most of the battleground states. What do you think about where the election is 4 weeks away?
Closer than that. I think that about six of the battleground states are very close. Maybe two, Biden has punched a lead. One, I'm not sure about because I hadn't dealt with that yet. But I think that it's closer than what that suggests. And I think that, I mean, the question is, can Trump close this election out and like he did in 16? I don't know. But right now, I think Biden has, you know, he has a slight lead. I'd say 3-4 points nationally. But Trump can win Electoral College with getting beat 3 or 4 points. That's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, only five times in history has a candidate gotten fewer votes and been elected president, and one of those was last time. But it's never happened. Never happened in a re-election campaign. Trump would be the first candidate.
That's right.
And Biden, let's face it, is going to get more votes than Donald Trump. That's going to happen. But in America, we go by the Electoral College, and Trump still has a chance. And Roy, we'll be calling on you.
Okay, man. Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate you. Take care. We're joined now by Francesca Bowman, a writer, historian, television presenter. She lives in London and in Los Angeles, and I think today she is joining us from London, and her latest work is certainly provocative, and in these times, certainly the dating scene has changed a bit with COVID-19, but her book is Matrimony, Inc., From Personal Ads to Swinging Right, or swiping right, excuse me, A Story of America Looking for Love. Now, you're fascinated with how we do it in the United States. How do we approach finding a mate in our country different than in other parts of the world, based on your knowledge, Francesca?
Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, well, it was fascinating to research 250 years of how Americans have searched for a mate. And what became clear so much earlier than anyone would think was right back in the 18th century when people started placing the first personal ads. America was different in some ways, and yet because it's all about evolution, similar in others. So certainly in the beginning, there was a real focus on what resources the man in question might have. So did he have property? Did he have a job? Was he in business? So some of the early ads right back to, 1759, 1769, will say a typical one will say something like, a modest young man, 23 years of age and good prospects, or a respectable gentleman well-established in a lucrative business. So straight away, they really will emphasize their financial situation to make themselves an appealing marital prospect. I mean, you might say that's not so different to any other countries or, even, in fact, to today. And that's what's interesting, is that in terms of courtship, some things change, right? But some things change stay exactly the same.
The book is Matrimony, Inc., From Personal Ads to Swiping Right, A Story of America Looking for Love. You've also done voluminous research on British personal ads. How do we differ from ads in your country?
Well, I would say certainly the American personal ads were more upfront about the economics of marriage, more upfront about what kind of physical appearances, I suppose, men, or in fact lots of women who placed ads in the 18th century, were looking for. So that was something that stayed the same. But you know what is very similar wherever you get personal ads, whether it's the 18th century or whether it's Tinder or other dating apps today, is the reason why people were placing ads. So if whether it was in New Orleans or Philadelphia or New York in the 1750s, they will talk about in these personal ads that they are strangers in the city, or that they work very long hours and don't have time to meet other people, or that they don't have any family or friends around to introduce them. And so what's interesting is how much these have stayed the same. And you get that even with America's first personal ad, which I found for the first time in Boston in 1759, much earlier than anyone knew. It's really revealing about what gentlemen in Boston looked for in a woman. The advertiser wanted any young lady between the age of 18 and 23 of a middling stature, brown hair, regular features, and of good morals and a lively, brisk eye, possessed of £300 or £400 entirely at her own disposal. So that really gives you a sense of what gentlemen looked for in a wife in 1759. It's really, my book's really about the history of, people's innermost desires, what they wanted in a wife or indeed in a husband in the 18th and 19th century.
Well, we deal with, appearance being a factor when we first meet someone. And so if we're describing ourselves, we might exaggerate. And a listener, Lauren, says she's never gone on a personal ad because she's 6'1", and these guys who go on there, they tend to exaggerate about their height. Can you imagine that?
Well, I will say there have always been exaggerations in personal ads ever since they first started. But there was certainly, height wasn't mentioned as much in those days. Good teeth was very popular. You get that a lot. Good teeth was a very popular factor in the 18th century or 19th century, really because it shows you're, healthy and strong. But certainly there has always been a little bit of dissemblance, shall we say, or exaggeration when it comes to personal ads, for sure.
Now, when people go on these sites, are they looking for a lifetime companion in most cases, or are they just looking for somebody to spend a night or two with?
Well, I think it varies. What was interesting to me as a historian is how way back, in the 19th century, there was a real range of what people were looking for. So in the 1860s, particularly in Midwestern cities, actually, St. Louis, Cincinnati, you get the first personal ads from people looking not for marriage, matrimony as they call it, but they'll say looking for a bit of fun or a companion. You know, right back to the 1860s, there's a very broad interpretation of what people are looking for. So that has been around certainly for 150, 200 years. And was interesting to compare those 1860s personal ads to dating apps or websites today, when, as you say, some people are looking for long-term relationships and some people are not. But again, you know, that's a very human instinct that doesn't change even when the technology does.
Now, the technology has changed immensely, and now we have immense opportunities to meet people in other ways. And there are, as you note, ways to do that independent of just reaching out to somebody. But what about personal sites on places like Instagram?
Right, and they're popular too, and they will always evolve. You know, whenever you get a new technology, whether it's the printing press or the internet, really one of the first uses it's always been put to is in relationships, and that is never going to change. So whether with the first newspapers in America, you get the first personal ads, through to the first, when the internet emerged, it was the first use it was put to was to sites like Match.com, and today, as you say, with social media, Instagram and other social medias are taking that role. But what was fascinating to me is that idea that whenever there's a new technology, whether it's newspapers or whether it's social media, humans are always looking for a connection, right? And they'll always put that as its first purpose, you know, whether it's today or whether it's 200 years ago. And so that's why with my book, Matrimony, Inc., it's really about what men have looked for in a woman, what women looked for in a man, and how that's changed or actually often not changed over the past 250 years. In many ways, it's a history of human mate choice in America.
All right. Well, what does a man look for generally from first one or two qualities?
Well, in the 18th century, Jim, it was mostly good teeth or some property. those are both very very popular.
Just teeth.
I think you don't get good teeth so much on you know, dating apps today, but who knows?
All right, and today a nice smile would probably be pretty high up, but
right, exactly. It tends to be a combination of some kind of resources, right? And the definition of resources can vary, whether it's cash or property or a large Instagram following or a nice smile. Those are all attributes that will, you know, help that couple that ensues to make their way through life. But obviously most of the criteria are deeply evolutionary. They are different variations on having resources, being fertile, you know, all these evolutionary factors that, of course, will never change.
And women, what are they looking for most likely?
Broadly, women are looking for resources, and that can be very broad. That can mean a great sense of humor to get you through difficult times. It can mean a lot of cash. It can mean it's very, very broad. But again, it's evolutionary. So if you're analyzing it in terms of personal ads, it's about
money.
Right. Well, being able to support any ensuing offspring. Now, obviously, that's a generalization, as you know, as women's roles change, as men's roles change. But if one's generalizing from the history of personal ads, then certainly there's an evolutionary component to all of this.
Well, thank you for joining us. The book is Matrimony, Inc., from the remarkable writer Francesca Bowman, who was kind enough to join us from Great Britain today. And congrats and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And be safe in the COVID age, especially if you're meeting people online. Lauren Hickman, our social media producer, says that it was on this date in 1917 that Fannie Lou Hamer was born. American civil rights activist, Freedom Summer, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. It was in Montgomery County, Mississippi. Thanks to Jeff Palermo producing today in the absence of Matt Doyle. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan.